Welcome to Charlotte Readers Podcast, where authors give voice to their written words. This is the show where we meet Charlotte area authors and authors who visit the Queen City, and we hear them read their work. Our sponsor for the first season is Park Road Books, the oldest and only full-service independent bookstore in Charlotte. They're located in Park Road Shopping Center. They've got a great staff and an awesome collection of books. And if they don't have something in stock that you want, they can order it for you and have it there quickly. And please check out our website, charlottereaderspodcast.com. You can get information about the show and about our guest authors. We'd love to have you become a regular listener. You can listen on iTunes or wherever you like to get your podcasts. And on our website, you can sign up for our email list. We promise not to spam you, just give you updates from time to time about the show. And if you do join, as a thank you, we'll give you a free ebook, the first in a trilogy written by your host. I'm your host, Landis Wade. Thank you for listening. Today we're going to laugh a bit with author Tracy Curtis as she reads humor essays from Trophy Mom and Beach Bund. And in the spirit of the Christmas season, she also reads from Holidays, which won a National 2016 Independent Publisher Book Award. Tracy teaches creative writing and humor workshops and says, there's humor in everything. Sometimes you just have to look for it. Her first reading is from Beach Bummed, Riding the Wave of Summer. It's entitled Beach Chair Gets a C-, that's S-E-A. It's a story where the husband and wife don't see eye to eye literally and figuratively, and stems from the author's first husband's bringing two different height chairs to the beach. So let's go to the beach with Tracy Curtis.
Beach chair gets a C-. Back when we were dating, I bought us matching beach chairs. His blue to match his eyes and mine green to match mine, and it all sounds ridiculous now, but at the time it really seemed cute. And not just ordinary beach chairs, backpack chairs. Chairs with straps that you could carry on your back with a pouch for all your stuff. We could walk for miles holding hands, plop them down in the water and let the ocean wash over our feet, do a crossword together, share a beer, gaze into each other's eyes. Several years and two children later, daydreaming in the car on our way to the beach, I turned to him with a sappy smile and tried to draw him in with the obvious question. Beach chairs? I tease. Got 'em, he smiles back. Actually, I got one of each. The daydream wraps up. One of each? Huh? I got one beach chair and one of my tailgate chairs, he declares. That chair is like a foot taller than my beach chair. How are we supposed to sit together on the beach? How are we supposed to do the crossword? We're going to have to hand it up and down. I'm practically going to have to rig a pulley system just to get your beer up there, and every time I look over at you, all I'm going to see are your hairy legs. With two kids running around, what do you think the chances are that we're both going to be sitting at the same time? Good point. But mine's better. Mine's about recreating a courtship and rekindling romance, and I can't really do that with him perched 16 inches above me. And then our friends get there, and what do you know? They have tailgate chairs too. Great. So there we all are, lined up in the surf, three high chairs and a booster seat. In no time, I become a second-class citizen. Nobody talks to me because I'm too low, and with the waves crashing, I can't hear anything. Even when people walk over to talk, they only address the tall people. What? I yell up. I didn't hear that. They're buying a sink? They invited us by for a drink, somebody hollers down, shoving some trash into my pouch. Not only am I a garbage receptacle, I'm fair game for any mangy dog loose on the beach. I get licked around the neck before Lurch up there bothers to shoo him away with his foot. At least the slobber doesn't last long with the kids running in front of me splashing up salt water. Me being on even ground with the cooler becomes hugely convenient for the upperclassmen. I can't even count the number of times I'm asked to just reach in there for me, will ya? I know it's a lot because in an hour I haven't gotten past the table of contents in my book. And then my husband turns his chair toward the sun, propping his big toes on the arm of my chair. Now I'm a footstool? That's it. Since when does sitting in a lower chair move you to a lower class? I'm still a person. I still exist. I still want to be included in conversations and invited for... big wave. And in two backward somersaults, I'm officially wiped off the beach. I missed two cocktail parties and a crossword, but one of the dogs remembered my scent and dug me out in time for dinner. Thankfully, all the dining chairs matched.
Author Tracy Curtis is a former syndicated humor columnist for the McClatchy Company, nationwide. She wrote over 500 columns for the Charlotte Observer and then published her Humor Me trilogy, collections of her columns from the last decade about the imperfection of motherhood. In 2017, Tracy was announced as a top 10 finalist in the Anna Leffler, Irma Bombeck Humorist in Residence Writing Competition that drew over 400 applicants from six countries. A former CNN producer, Tracy enjoyed a 15-year career in radio, television, and film. She is currently working on her first novel entitled Wit Happens. And when she's not writing, she says she's unloading the dishwasher. Tracy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes. I'm trying not to laugh while you're reading this so that so that the reader can hear everything that's going on here. But this, you know, I'm thinking here, this, we're talking about beach chair gets a C minus. That's an SEA minus, right?
Right.
Okay. Where do you come up with these titles for these stories? I mean, that's part of your humor, too, I suppose, is coming up with the right title.
Yeah, well, I like kind of punny and funny catchy titles that sort of, you know, one thing writing for the newspaper, and they did, in my byline, they didn't actually say that I was a humor columnist, so I'd always try to write a funny headline to kind of prepare people for, okay, hey, this is funny, this is silly, please don't take this seriously.
Right.
And so at the newspaper, I got into sort of the habit of setting up that this is humor. And so I always try to have a headline that sort of catches your eye and makes you kind of giggle a little and want to know more.
And you've been writing humor for how long now?
It started at the beginning of 2005. I don't know if you want to hear the story.
Well, you sort of fell into this, right? I mean, you were looking to do other things, and then you got asked to write this column, and then you started writing it, and motherhood was happening, and your life was happening, and your marriage was happening and wasn't happening, and suddenly all these words started coming out on the page. Is that it?
Yeah. Well, pretty much. Yeah. I had entered a contest. I thought I was going to jumpstart my television career. And I had entered a contest to be a red carpet correspondent at the American Idol finale in 2005, the year Carrie Underwood won. And I won this contest, and the newspaper did a story about the local mom who was going to go to Hollywood. And they asked me to blog from behind the scenes. And so I wrote a really silly blog about what was going on in mm-hmm. Hollywood and on the red carpet and with all the celebrities. And when I got back, they said, you know, well, we didn't know you were a writer. And I just
and
laughed.
You said, I didn't know it was.
I said, I've never written anything in my life. And they said, well, you're really funny. Will you write something else? And at the time, I was pregnant, and I was about to turn 40. And so I blogged about being 40 and pregnant in a mm-hmm. blog that I called Stork Raving Mad. And then all of a sudden, you know, I had the baby, I ended the blog, and they said, we'd like for you to write for the paper as our first ever family humor columnist.
Okay, and that went through about 500 columns, right?
500 columns over a period of 10 years.
And then they asked you to work for free.
and then, as we all know, the newspaper suddenly lost an enormous amount of weight. Mm-hmm. And budget cuts came, and with that came an invitation to continue to write my column, but without pay. And I just felt like at that point, I am a firm believer in something worth being published is worth being paid for. It had been 10 years, and I think it was sort of kind of mm-hmm. quit while you're ahead. It in my mind, it had run its course, and it was probably time for me to try some new things.
But you didn't quit. You took all these columns, and you put together three fun books that we're going to talk about today. And you call them the collection. What do you call the collection?
It's the collection's called the Humor Me series.
The Humor Me series. Okay. And the first one that we're reading from, the title of the first book is Beach Bombed, Riding the Wave of Summer. And so I assume that, of course, the beach chair, we get the message there. All of these are sort of around summer type issues with moms dealing with kids and marriage and what have you?
Yes, this collection is a collection of all my summer-related columns. So it's beach, it's travel, you know, summer travel with your family, it's summer boredom, summer camp. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to have like a nice little beach read, summer reading, fun, kind of easy to get through book.
And I noticed you got some great reviews here. You got mouth-watering, I tore right through it, Jaws. Dude, this book is gnarly, Surfer. We don't see what's so funny about summer crabs. I mean, you got a lot of good reviewers here looking at your book.
Yeah. Yes, it was very well read and yeah. Came with a lot of high praise.
A great beach read, thrilled to shell out money for these pearls of wisdom, the oysters. Yeah. So... You're infusing humor in the title and the reviews and the title of the book. And then we get into this beach chair. And, you know, I'm thinking about this. I'm reading. I was laughing when I read it before the taping here. This is where he made his mistake. I mean, all he had to do was say, well, let's just switch chairs, you know.
I hadn't thought about that.
You know, I mean, that's what I would have done. I like being down closer to the sand anyway. I mean, and that's closer to the beer. So anyway, but, you know, I'm also thinking when I'm taking my kids to the beach when they're young, you're hauling. I mean, you're a pack animal, right? I mean, you're taking stuff into the car, out of the car, down to the beach, back to the beach. So these ideas like this one, at the time, of course, you're this lowly second-class citizen sitting very low compared to the other adults there. You're not having a good day, but then you find humor in it. Is that what happens with a lot of your humor writing? I mean, it's either, it might be tension, conflict, a misunderstanding, disappointment, tragedy, embarrassment, but then somehow, even though at the time that's what it is, as you reflect on it, you find some, as the oysters would say, some pearls of wisdom.
Yeah. I guess, you know, I think it's just real. Mm. And these are things that happen to everyone. Mm. And I think the column was successful because these were universal themes. How many of us have never been upset about something that happened on a family vacation? Oh. And I like to take like just sort of everyday things that happen to everyone and then make you see them in a completely different way.
Yeah, we're going to talk about your craft of sort of pulling these together later, but I want to keep the flow going here. We've got another one in this book. We're in a different setting. We're headed off to vacation. We're not at the beach. We're getting ready to board a flight, and you've titled this one. Well, I'm gonna let you read the title and start. But it looks like this in this story, you missed your era. You should have been one of those women that had a steamer trunk and was riding on the high seas.
Yes.
So anyway, I'm going to let you introduce the title and then read this story here, okay?
Okay. This one's called Carried Away Over Baggage. Since when did carrying your bags onto an airplane become more convenient than checking them? The whole point of checking your bag is the convenience of bringing everything you need and then having somebody else deal with it while you go off and get coffee in People magazine. Everything about carrying a bag is completely inconvenient, starting with picking the bag, as it has to be a certain size. You don't order your entree based on the size of the plate, so why would you pack for vacation based on the size of the luggage? It's vacation! You don't know what the weather's going to be or what activity you may do or where you'll end up eating dinner. You need options, and not sensible ones, fashionable ones. My jean jacket's fine for the crab shack, but if I end up in a place where I don't have to dump my silverware out of a plastic sleeve, I want my cashmere wrap. Carry-on people say a comfortable walking shoe and a dressy shoe will take care of all situations. I don't think so. Which one do you play tennis in? And what if your group thinks it'd be fun to walk to the dressy restaurant? Now which shoe do you wear? And nothing's convenient about pouring shampoo, lotion, and mouthwash into tiny 3-ounce plastic bottles, figuring you'll just smell it to identify it later, only to accidentally inhale 2 ounces of hair gel in time to walk to dinner in a sundress paired with a loafer. Some folks don't want to pay the $50 to check the bag. Well, how much do you think a pair of tennis shoes and a cashmere wrap are going to cost you? In a resort town! Not to mention another round of hair products to replace the ones you've put up your nose. For that, you could have checked your entire closet and a steamer trunk. But the biggest reason people won't check their bag? They don't want to wait for it when they get home. Really? You're home. Vacation's over. Why are you in such a hot hurry to get home? All you're going to do is unpack and do laundry. I am just fine to sit in baggage, catch my breath, and watch CNN. I can only hope it's long enough to feed my kids another airport meal, which I promise you beats anything that's been sitting in the fridge all week. I'll check my bag because I want the convenience of having all my stuff, plenty of options, and products in their specially marked bottles. I don't want to decide today what I'm going to wear to dinner next Friday. And I don't want my toiletry bag to look like a chemistry set. And I don't want to play tennis in Jimmy Choo's. Those hard courts are hell on my heels.
Okay. Well, you know, I think the one you hit on here, the biggest reason people won't check their bags, they don't want to wait for it when they get home. We're in a society that nobody likes to wait, right? We don't like to wait at the stop sign, the stoplight, the food line, you know, the ticket counter. People don't like to wait, right? They're always in a hurry, right? Always in a hurry to get on the plane, even though the plane's not going to take off for another 30 minutes, right? And they got to be the first one on the plane. So this actually stemmed from an argument as well, right?
I was traveling with who's now my second husband. I figure the more husbands I have, the more material I have.
I was going to say, so this wasn't the first husband, right? So the second husband's already made it into the stories?
Yeah. We're going to introduce our listeners to all my husbands today. So this is husband number two, which I'll give away the spoiler. This is the last of the husbands. But So I'm dating my, now second husband, then boyfriend, and he travels a lot. And I don't. So I've always checked my bag. And when he came to pick me up and saw the size of my suitcase, he was like, you can't carry that on. I was like, I would never do that. Like I always check my bag. And he was just like, but why? I mean, we're going to have to go to baggage. We're going to have to wait for it. And I'm like, but I'll have everything I need. Like, that's the most important thing.
There's nothing left in my closet at home, right?
There's nothing left. The interesting thing is I didn't know, just for all you listeners out there, it is possible to pack for as many as 2 weeks in a carry-on bag. It's right. And if you ever want
if you don't take six pair of shoes.
You right? can only take two pair of shoes and some flip-flops, but right. I'm happy to show you how to do it.
Yeah. I'm looking at you kind of get into the class warfare. You got carry-on people and you got the bag checking people. You got two classes of people here. And I'm guessing that having read this, you're not a you don't consider camping a vacation, you know?
No, you got that right.
So is a lot of your material, you joked about, you know, the husbands and the material, but does a lot of your material just sort of bubble up from these real life situations that married couples and mothers and their kids engage in? I mean, just things that everybody experiences that drives them crazy sometimes, but then you find sort of a humorous side to it and kind of try to bring that out.
Yeah, I mean, if I was really going to like psychoanalyze myself, and now that it's been a couple years since I've been writing for the paper, I've been able to kind of reflect on what I was writing and when I was writing it. And I think like a lot of the Robin Williams and the Kevin Harts of the world, you know, they write from pain and anxiety and fear and personal experiences. And I think for me, humor in a lot of ways is a coping mechanism, and sometimes it's better just to kind of find the funny, or easier for me to find the funny in something than maybe to really take a hard look at it. The reality is halfway through the 10-year period of writing the newspaper, I'm this family humor columnist in the paper writing these witty stories every Sunday, but behind the scenes, my actual family was starting to fall apart. And I think that, you know, a lot of married couples struggle, and there's a lot that's like not funny about it, of course. But I think that sort of going through that separation at a time where I was sharing so much of my personal life with people, I somewhere instinctively was trying to find a way to make light of what was becoming a really difficult situation. And so some people read my things and say, oh, that's so funny, ha ha. And some people say, gosh, that's funny, but kind of funny, sad. I never really looked at it that way. But looking back at some of the things that I've written, I think that there was some sadness underneath and that I was just trying to handle things in the best way that I could.
So we're not going to get into the whole psychoanalytic stuff today.
Now I'm like crying.
I know, I can see it in your eyes. Like
the most depressing show I've ever been a part of.
Had to put a parental warning on this one. Yeah, exactly. But I was going to ask you whether it was hard to write. I mean, you had an expectation once you'd built up these columns of writing in a humorous way, and yet you're going through some things that you're not telling people publicly in your columns, but you're experiencing them. Did it become hard to find the funny in some of these things during that time?
Well, I think ultimately what ended up happening, because, you know, I remember going to my editor and telling him that I was getting a divorce, you know, and I'm like, I'm not stupid. I'm the family humor columnist without a family at the moment. I'm going to lose my job. And, you know, the Charlotte Observer, they were really great about it. They said, write about it, don't write about it. You know, it's completely up to you. And I think what I decided to do, because I have a really close relationship with my first husband. He's the father of my children. And we spend a lot of time together. Like, we have a really, really great relationship.
He's the one with the hairy legs.
shoving trash into my chair. Yeah. But, you know, we have a really good relationship. And so I didn't really want to, like, get into all that in my newspaper column. So here's the lesson. What I ended up doing was I reinvented myself. I went from sort of being, you know, the family humor columnist to more, of the universal humor columnist. I sort of transitioned the column from family humor into more everyday humor. And that was really exciting for me. It was different because then I didn't have to write about kids and, you know, mom stuff anymore. I got to write about two-story Harris teeters and yoga pants and carry-on bags and, you know.
We're going to read about yoga pants in a minute. but just to take that a step further, after you've written all these stories, you've compiled them in these books, you've got your humor trilogy, you're not going to read from it today, but you are embarking on a new quest here with the book that you're working on now, right? I mean, you've got this. Give me the title that you're thinking about for that book.
Wit Happens.
And it's going to be about you writing during some of these times, right?
Yes, it's fiction, of course, but it just coincidentally happens to be about a family humor columnist who is secretly going through a divorce.
Yeah. Nobody will figure that one out.
Yes, total fiction. But, you know, I wanted to tell, I mean, yes, it's loosely autobiographical, but all of the people are different than from real life, of course. But I thought that it was an interesting story and a story about a woman who finds her voice through the newspaper and in the end finds her authentic self. Mm-hmm. And
makes her way to a podcast.
And makes her way to a podcast with Landis Wade. It is a humorous book. It's very funny, but it has a lot of you know, sort of women empowerment, mm-hmm. and defining your life and finding your voice and finding your authentic self and a lot about reinventing yourself.
Well, I see by the title of your next book that you're going to read from that you are, in fact, a trophy mom. Is that?
Self-proclaimed.
The title is Trophy Mom, Hope Springs Maternal. But I got to ask you, you've got some catchy covers on your books here with, did you have to, like, I mean, where'd these legs come from? You've got, you know.
Well, yeah. It started, the first book I published.
By the way, for the listeners who can't see, you can go out and you can go to Tracy's website, which is, by the way, your website, Tracy?
TracyLeeCurtis.com.
Okay. If you go there, you'll see these great pictures of these titles with a woman holding up a sign. You can see her eyes. Are those your eyes?
That is my head, my eyes, my hair, my fingers.
Your fingers. As we get below the sign?
Below the sign are like this like amazing pair of perfect legs that I purchased on Shutterstock for $25.
You can buy legs on Shutterstock.
On sale now, yes. For the low, low price of $25, you too, Landis, can have perfect legs.
All right.
So it was sort of funny because when I was creating the books, the first one that I had done was the Christmas book that we'll get to, but I wanted cute little legs with a little Santa skirt and red shoes, and I was able to find those. So you purchase them, and then you just, you know, you Photoshop them in. And so as I started putting together the collection, because they're all themes, you know, Trophy Mom was next, and Trophy Mom is about moms in the spring season, and it was sort of geared towards gift giving around Mother's Day. And so she's in a cute little flowered skirt and high heels, and then beach bummed. Of course, she's like in shorts and sandals. And it just sort of helped establish that this is the theme of the book.
So this is top-notch journalism here. I've just discovered we've got different sets of legs on the covers of these books, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of deceptive.
If you put them all together, you're like, yeah, they're not quite, okay. You know. But I do like that people do assume that those are my legs. I try to be honest. But yeah.
Well, a couple of reviews here for Trophy Mom, Hope Springs Maternal. You've got, I'm surprised to read Tracy still doesn't know how to cook, former mother-in-law. What? She doesn't cook? Soon to be mother-in-law. I don't get the title. Did you win something? Mom. Yeah, see, I mean, your reviewers, I mean, they're coming to your aid here, right? Yeah.
Yes. It's very hard to secure blurbs, and so clearly, I wanted to have the perfect blurb to fit the perfect.
So just make one up, right?
Yeah, exactly. I just make it up. I stole that from Tina Fey. Tina Fey wrote a book called Bossy Pants.
Right.
And all of her blurbs she wrote herself and attributed to, like, you know, her high school boyfriend and her chemistry teacher and her dad, you know. And I thought, I'm totally doing that.
That's great. All right, so we're going to talk about, yoga pants. So give us a title and let's have some more fun.
Okay. I'll have to tell you this story about how this one came about, too. It's pretty funny. This one's called Yoga Pants Pose a Public Problem. Yoga pants are not pants. They're just not. Much like tie-dye has nothing to do with neckties and gum shoes have nothing to do with shoes or gum, yoga pants have nothing to do with pants, slacks, or trousers and shouldn't be worn as such. They're bottoms! Covering bottoms! For the purpose of being covered up during your high lunge, your half moon, your revolve triangle, and for heaven's sake, your downward facing dog. They are not for the purpose of running errands. Don't come bopping into the elementary school wearing bottoms when the dress code calls for pants that fit at the waist and skirts that hit at the knee. You're wearing the equivalent of pantyhose. They're tight, they're shimmery, and the top's controlled. They don't have feet, but you line dry them just the same. If you can keep them out of the dryer, you can keep them out of the school and out of Starbucks, which is where I learned this lesson when I scooted in for a coffee after yoga and the guy behind me said, "I like it when you girls wear yoga bottoms as pants. I wish they did it all the time." Oh, really? You do? And why is that? Is it because they make us move faster through the Starbucks line? I didn't think so. But thank you for making the distinction between bottoms and pants and a case for a full-length coat. So keep your bottoms out of Starbucks and out of the grocery store. I hear people asking if you just came from yoga, and you say, no, you just threw on your yoga pants this morning because they're just so comfortable. Which I don't get. How can you be comfortable? You're wearing spandex with a parka and your butt's hanging out. Aren't you cold? When you open the freezer to reach for that Lean Cuisine, don't you feel a chill? Slip on some sweats. They're warmer, and I promise you they'll keep the teenage boys from suddenly looking for Lean Cuisine pizza. Try warm-up pants, because what you required for an intense side stretch is not needed to reach for the spaghetti sauce. If you need to stretch that intensely, I suggest you put on your heels. But don't go thinking by putting on a pair of heels with your yoga pants, you're going to fool anyone into thinking they're leggings, because yoga bottoms are skin-tight and shiny. This is the grocery store, not a chorus line. Although I have to say, the last time I was shopping behind a gal who was rocking a pair of yoga pants, I didn't buy much. Not much at all. First time we ever had mineral water and kale for dinner. And I went to yoga every single day that week. So, all right, you can wear your yoga bottoms to the grocery store. Just call me so I can meet you there.
Okay. First thing I'd ask, did anyone react to this? Did you get reader mail when you were writing for The Observer?
Oh my gosh, did I get reader mail? Yes. And it's funny, like, you can get hate mail as a humor columnist, which
really? People just hate on humor?
They don't
get the humor.
They don't think it's funny. And I will tell you, I became like the most hated woman in Charlotte. I remember when this came out, I got a call from my neighbor and she said, "Tracy Curtis," she goes, "you have just declared war on the women of Charlotte." I just had no idea. And the funny thing about this column was, I had started writing something for the style section, and it was called Style Humor, and I was very uncomfortable doing this, but they had asked me to to, in addition to my weekly Sunday column, write the style column. And the editor that week had said, why don't you do something like kind of a what not to wear? And I was like, oh, no.
I've already done that.
I was like, I don't want to be judgmental. I don't want to rag on women. I don't want to put anyone down.
Wait, you said you don't want to be judgmental. You're judgmental in all these things.
See, I have no self-awareness. Are you getting it? I'm a mess. I need analysis. No. Do you know a good therapist?
Yeah.
But in my mind, I was like, that something like that's only going to get me in trouble. But then I was in the grocery store with my son, who at the time was 10. This was Colton. And we were behind a girl in these lavender, like highly see-through yoga pants. And my son looked at her.
He's focused.
He was focused. She was walking away from us. And my son looked at me and he goes, Mom, he goes, look at that. And I was like, indeed. Yeah. And so then all of a sudden I was like, oh, maybe I'll write like a funny little story about yoga pants. Right. But make sure at the end, you know, I kind of say, you know, I get it. Yeah. But that didn't soften the blow for the women of Charlotte who go everywhere in their yoga pants.
So I'm reading this at home and I'm laughing and my wife Janet says, what are you laughing at? And I said, well, I'm reading the one about yoga pants. And she says, I remember that. She says, I remember when Tracy wrote that in the paper. She said she got in trouble for that, didn't she? Or something. Did you get caught somewhere wearing yoga pants out in public after this?
Yes, because I'm such a hypocrite and have no self-awareness and obviously have a lot of issues I need to address. Yes, I went from yoga, in fairness to myself. I was at yoga. I ran into Starbucks where a friend of mine saw me and took a picture of me and posted it to Facebook and said,
and then it went viral.
Can it be Tracy Curtis in her yoga pants in Starbucks? And so then it all blew up all over again. And then the paper at the end of the year, I was in the year-end style edition for being in my yoga pants and a
so
Starbucks.
You have to do a retraction from your yoga column or something?
No, I just need to get some help.
Well, okay, so now you've offended the women. Let's turn to one where you offend the men and all the baseball lovers in Charlotte, okay?
Yes, let's. Okay, so this one's called Pitch Imperfect. Watching a Yankees game on TV with my boys, I figured out what bothers me about baseball. Nothing ever happens. There's a guy pitching to another guy, hoping he'll hit it, hoping to put the ball in play so the game can start. But there's no guarantee he'll hit it. There's no guarantee anybody will hit it. In fact, it's such a possibility that no one will hit it that there's a term for it. It's called a no-hitter. It's the only sport that has a term for nothing happen. They even created a position dedicated to catching the balls the batters don't hit. The catcher. He gets paid $1 million to keep a 4-hour game from turning into an 8-hour game by saving the batter from having to run after all the balls he misses. But they're hopeful. They have another term for when somebody actually hits the ball, but still nothing happens. A perfect game. A game where they hit the ball, but nobody makes it to a base. To me, the perfect game, at least the perfect game to watch, would be everybody hitting it and everybody getting on bases and scoring runs. A sport with the most people involved seems to have the least amount of action. Not much happens in golf, but at least they're in constant motion the entire 4 hours. In baseball, if somebody hits the ball, the action lasts 6 seconds. And the guy's only gone 90 feet. Best case scenario, he does the biggest thing you can do in baseball, which is hit a home run. But even that only takes 20 seconds, and he ends up right back where he started, while Ernie Els ends up in the clubhouse with a beer in his hand. Do you know how many pitches there are? Fastball, knuckleball, spitball, screwball, 10 ways to throw it, but only one way to hit it. Seems to me they should throw it one way and come up with 20 ways to make contact with it. But here we sit, watching one guy throw a ball to another guy while somebody stands in the middle and takes swipes at it. If you think about it, it's really just a nice game of catch between the pitcher and the catcher. And every now and then, somebody interrupts them by hitting it. Baseball is interrupted catch. I guess that's why every dad on the planet takes their son out to play catch. Because in the majors, if you're the pitcher or the catcher, then you're the one really playing baseball. And everybody's watching.
Okay, so how many letters, emails did you get about the purity of the game of baseball and how you don't understand what the heck you're talking about? You get a few of those?
Just a few. My favorite was, you're an embarrassment to baseball, an embarrassment to the Charlotte Observer, and an embarrassment to the city of Charlotte.
And you don't even go to enough baseball games to embarrass anybody at a baseball game, right?
Well, the funny thing about it is, I mean, if you look at it, obviously it's very well researched.
Right.
And I'm quite knowledgeable about baseball. And the reality is, okay, you'll love this, back to the husbands. My first husband was an avid, rabid Yankees fan, and my second husband is an avid, rabid Red Sox fan.
Oh, wow.
So there's always baseball on in my house. Both my kids played Little League. We go to night's games. I mean, we're a baseball family.
Yeah. No, I coached Little League for 20 years. I played baseball. My son played baseball. My daughter played softball. I mean, I've been to thousands of baseball games, and I'm laughing my head off when I'm reading this thing because it's so clever. I mean, I love how you turned a no-hitter into a name for a sport that nothing happened. I mean, I will have to say this, though. You're making this game sound even slower than something like cricket. I mean, come on.
No. No.
Have you ever tried to watch a cricket game on BBC or something? I mean, talk about.
It's worse.
And you're saying this is slower than golf? I mean, you know, you could get some nice parallels there and so forth. But and here's the interesting fact. Did you know that an average, I heard this on a podcast, average time that an NFL football play takes is 4 seconds.
Oh, really?
Now, they've averaged them all out over the course of the time, but you know, that's even less than your 6 seconds to get on base here, you know?
I know. The funny thing is, it was all in fun, and it was sort of born out of me, like, watching and going, gosh, nothing ever happens in baseball. And I thought, well, that's kind of let me just explore that. And one of my kind of, like, humor tricks is going on these silly rants and then, like, backing up my ridiculous statements with, like, facts. And, you know, unfortunately that humor was lost on some people, but it's interesting when people do send me like really like hate letters and just, you know, so upset that I've written this thing, I always responded to readers and I would, you know, pretty much use the same line. I would say, look, it was meant to give you a chuckle, not a coronary.
Right, right.
And then I say, you know, it was all in fun. I'm sorry if like you were offended. It really was, you know, it was just a little bit of baseball humor. And then they write back right away. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Like, I didn't know that you were like trying to be funny. I mean, I'm so glad that you love baseball.
They didn't think you were trying to be funny here? Okay.
I mean, so, you know, people are very passionate about yoga pants and baseball. So noted.
So you've covered all the bases here then.
Exactly.
There you go. Pun. So you got this craft idea. And I heard you speak at the Charlotte Writers Club about this, about how you make lists of words and then you kind of back into some of these. Talk about that just a minute, about this idea. Because you get a concept in mind. You want to write about baseball. But then to research it, as you say, you need to sort of get an idea as to some of the terms that are serious to the topic. And so you pick out things like no-hitter and catcher and pitcher, and then you start working off of those terms to come up with something humorous.
So, like, for this one, I identified, I don't know, like 10 or 12 baseball terms. And then, so you have the pitch, and then I thought, okay, well, how many pitches are there? And then, so then I made a list of all the different pitches. I had lists of all the different plays. And then you start getting into, you know, idioms and puns and, you know, double meanings and irony and alliteration and all those kinds of things. But my brain's what people don't understand, because when people meet me, they don't really find me to be particularly funny. And it's because I don't just sit down and just come up with this. Like, I could never just sit down and that just like came out of my head.
So you wouldn't be a stand-up comedian.
I wouldn't be a stand-up comedian.
Well, although, I mean, Tracy, you're doing pretty well though. You know?
I just feel like I can't wait to like call my therapist. But what people don't understand is you have to have a brainstorming session where you put all your ideas down on paper and then you make lots of lists. And when you look at lots of words and lots of phrases, all of a sudden it's like you see it. You go, oh, I'm going to put that with that, and won't that be funny?
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's just, my son last night had to write a 6-word memoir. And I said, well, write 6 simple words, like tell a story in 6 words, and then get on thesaurus and find 10 words that mean the same thing as your simple words, and I promise you, you'll see 6 words that go together in the coolest, most unusual, unique way that you would have never come up with on your own had you not seen it on the page.
And then he says, Mom, why don't you just write this for me?
He was like, don't try to make me a writer. Don't worry.
Okay. So we're going to shift now to, because we're in the holiday season, we've got Christmas coming up. You've got a book called Holidays, Wrapping Your Brain Around Christmas. And, you know, you've got some more really, really great reviews here. reading Tracy's old columns is haunting and hilarious. I feel like I was there. Ghost of Christmas Past. A fun, fast, frenetic read. We flew through it. Santa's Reindeer. But this is the best one. Funny, but overpriced. Scrooge. So, you know, in this book, you could have picked any number of them. But you picked one to illustrate, I think, what happens to all families that try to make Christmas into that portrait, into that memory that will last forever, that they can put in the scrapbook and say, that was the best Christmas we ever had. And it's Christmas perfection. Is there such a thing? Is that an oxymoron, Christmas perfection?
I think it's an oxymoron, but the pursuit of Christmas perfection is absolutely hilarious.
Okay, well, let's start with one here.
Okay. So this is called the Leonard Bernstein Symphony Orchestra. I'm reminded of the day I forever abandoned my pursuit of Christmas perfection. I'm walking with my 2 sons through beautiful Founders Hall on our way to the Belk Theater when I realize it's been years since I've been here. I've forgotten the beauty of the timeless design and the classic marble floors. Christmas lights twinkle and jingle bells fills the vaulted atrium. Mom, look at those singing bears! And there it is, the reason I haven't been here since 2008. For this is the scene of a hideous crime, an epic toddler meltdown that literally brought me to my knees. I only remember bits and pieces, thinking how sweet it'd be for Mommy to dress the boys in red Christmas sweaters, go uptown to see the Leonard Bernstein Symphony Orchestra, the computerized bears that play music with snow and Christmas trees all around, the perfect holiday outing with Mommy. And then, my 6-year-old wanting to touch the snow, my 2-year-old grabbing a fistful of the cotton, throwing it at his brother, then squealing, lots of running through the crowd of families, a dare to climb over the protective fence, a frantic attempt to get them out of there before we hurt someone or got arrested, my youngest screaming and suctioning himself face down to the floor, an irrational decision to take advantage of the slick marble and drag him by the sweater, my shopping bag ripping, me dropping to my knees, sobbing, the atrium carrying the crying high into the vaulted ceiling. Mom, this is really neat. How come we've never been here before? I never came back. I couldn't do it. I didn't even try to write a funny column about it. I honestly couldn't find the humor in it. There was something sad about it. Like, what kind of mother am I that I can't take 2 little children to a Christmas show without it falling apart? Sitting with them now in their nice clothes, their hair combed to the side, both enjoying the music, I understand it now. What I felt back then was fear, that I wasn't giving them the perfect Christmas experience, and failure, that their childhood wouldn't be this beautiful montage of holiday events and lights and music with Mom standing in the middle in a Christmas apron with a tray of fresh baked cookies singing Joy to the World. But rather being dragged 100 yards to a parking garage in a stretched-out sweater while strangers holler, Ma'am, do you need help? We've been here, I confess, and I tell them the story of Christmas fear and failure, and they laugh their heads off. I laugh too, happy to finally see the hilarity of it, but thanking the North Star they don't remember anything. So I go into the holiday season with a few thoughts. It won't be perfect, so don't try to be perfect. Don't plan every minute, and you may be gifted a moment. Dragging children is actually a lot faster than getting them to walk. And if they don't remember it, then it never happened.
Okay, so you're giving some good advice here at the end of this essay here. It won't be perfect, so don't try to be perfect. Don't plan every minute, and you may be gifted a moment. And, you know, if you kind of sit back and enjoy the season and reflect and the quiet, but that usually only happens after the kids are in bed and all everything's done and you've finally gotten to rest, right? I mean, right. And then maybe the next day. But so this story is emblematic, I would think, of so many things that can happen to families during the holiday season, whether it's the dinner that doesn't come off right, or you didn't order the gift in time and it's not going to show up to put it under the tree.
The Christmas card. Don't forget trying to get the Christmas card.
Yeah, the Christmas card out. In fact, that's a good transition. Let's go ahead and jump to the Christmas card, because getting the Christmas cards out is one thing, but then someone came up with the idea of doing a video for a Christmas card, right? And so we've got this next story that you wrote about someone that's even more perfect than Norman Rockwell's depiction of perfect. So let's read this one.
I'm going to hurt these people in another life. I'm going to come back and hurt them. Okay, this one's called Video Killed the Christmas Card. YouTube blew up with something new, the video Christmas card. If you haven't seen it, go check out hashtag Christmas Jammies. This family of four recorded a music video in their red and green striped Christmas PJs. The mom said they did it because they couldn't get their kids to sit still to take a good Christmas card picture. Awesome! I didn't even know this was an option. Here we are, racing around, trying to dress up our kids to sit on a stoop and snap a picture, when the whole time the answer was right in front of us. Just shoot a movie! I think I speak for all moms when I say I am just kicking myself that I didn't think of this. It makes so much more sense, starting with the fact that you don't have to search for the iron and your Sunday best. You just have to find matching pajamas that range in size from 4T to adult extra large, and have them monogrammed with everybody's name. How hard is that? And then you just dance around and shoot video. I mean, after you clean your house and decorate it so it looks fresh and festive for the camera. This family shot both interiors and exteriors, so better get the yard guy out there to blow the leaves off the steps in the driveway. Oh, and the vehicle in that driveway? It's a hybrid, so you might think about purchasing something environmentally friendly, because nobody wants to see you twerk around your gas guzzler. But once you get the Prius in place, you're good to go. Now you just need somebody to lay down a funky beat and wrap everybody's accomplishments. Well, I guess first somebody has to have some accomplishments, and then you need to dig up all the picture and the video documentation that you hopefully have so you can edit it all in after you buy editing equipment and learn how to edit. But then it's easy. Hell, the dad quits his job at the end of the video. I do that all the time. It's a cakewalk. I just need a camera crew, hair and makeup, and a hip-hop class, and a form-fitting undergarment if I'm going to wear pajama bottoms. The camera adds 10 pounds, 20 if you're doing the Running Man. And then there's no envelope addressing, stamp licking, or racing to the post office. Just write the song, record the track, cut and splice, and add some graphics. Then get your kids to give you the lowdown on the upload to the YouTube and post it to Facebook. Then relax and sip your wine. I am so glad I don't have to worry about that convoluted Christmas card next year. Whew.
Yeah, it would be just that easy, right? do the same people that made this card, the one that write the Christmas letter that's 10 pages single-spaced?
I'd much rather get a video than a 10-page letter.
That talks about their accomplishments going back to grade school.
Right. Yeah. So in the video, they did. They actually, they wrapped all of their accomplishments and then had pictures and the winning trophy and the award ceremonies. And yeah, so I like these two particular columns because... Yeah, I feel like, again, it's sort of like there's something sort of sad about Christmas and our, like, just our desperate need to make it the best Christmas ever for our children so that our children have the benefit of looking back at all these beautiful Christmases that we were able to, you know, mastermind for them. And just how disappointed we feel when things don't go perfect. I think we all experience that. We all strive for the perfect holiday. And I just really wanted to demonstrate in all of the columns in this book that the best laid plans, you know, it's never quite come to fruition.
Now you say sad. Maybe another word would be anxious or anxiety, because that comes with the holiday season that you're describing here.
It's the expectation.
The sadness is if it doesn't come off exactly like you wanted it to. But that's the... that's sort of the commercial side of Christmas, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and it's all trying to get everything done. It's, you've just added 10 things to your to-do list during the Christmas season, right?
Yeah, yeah. And there's such an expectation, and in some ways, you know, a little bit of competition. Like you can't just hang the wreath on your door anymore. You got to have candles in all the windows, and then like some inflatable Santa Claus, you know, behind 8 reindeer in your front yard. And then, you know, that's what it was so funny about that video Christmas card. In the book, I write about the actual, like, trying to get the Christmas picture. Then I wrote another article about how people started posting their Christmas cards to Facebook, which seemed completely unfair and robbed me of the opportunity to get the Christmas card in the mail and sit down and enjoy it and then put it on my mantle. And then here comes the, you know, hashtag Christmas Jammy video that went completely viral and just put us all to shame.
Yeah, and in full disclosure, you and I met one night at Christmas and Davidson. You were hawking your books, and I was hawking my Christmas book, and we found out that both of them have, you know, some humor in them. In fact, we're on this, in connection with this podcast, for people that sign up for our email list, they're going to get my first book in that trilogy free as an ebook, so they can check that out. But you're making fun of Christmas in all different categories. I'm making fun of Christmas in the courtroom.
Yeah. Christmas and lawyers. I do have a warning for writers out there who are going to attempt to take a page from my little blurb handbook. So when I was doing the blurbs for Holidays, which was my first book and where I was making all my rookie mistakes, my original blurbs I had attributed to Santa Claus and Frosty the Snowman and like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
We got some trademark and some copyright issues.
Well,
here.
Yeah, I had like, you know, Tracy Curtis puts Christmas chaos out in the cold where it belongs, you know, Frosty the Snowman, and Christmas is no laughing matter, Burger Meister, Meister Burger. And so I had a friend of mine who's a content editor that read it, and she called me right away and she goes, "Tracy, you can't quote these people, right. You'll get sued."
Exactly.
And I was like, I'm going to get sued by the Burger Meister Meister Burger?
But if you go back more than 90 years, as you did with Scrooge and Jingle Bells, I think, then you're probably good.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, she was like, it's serious. I mean, it is a trademark infringement. And so then I had to, like, Google fair use. So the Three Wise Men and the Nutcracker and Scrooge are all fair game.
I mean, that just sounds like an essay in itself, right? A humorous essay about...
It's actually the last column in the book about what would happen if I got sued by the Burger Meister, Meister Burger. You know, his attorney is, you know, Ebenezer Scrooge, and Santa Claus is the judge, and, you know, I come up, you know, I ride up on a camel, and, you know, so it's a very funny column about what would that look like if I really did get arrested.
Well, Tracy, your humor is a lot of fun. This collection is a lot of fun, and people can find it in bookstores, and I assume they connect with you on your website and online sources as well. Is that right?
Yep. Tracy Lee is TRACYLEE Curtis.com. All these books are available any place that sell books. My distributor is nationwide, so you could walk into like locally Park Road Books, and if they don't have it already, they can get it for you in a day or two. And of course, Amazon and all those online retail stores.
Any final advice so we can keep our humor during this Christmas season?
Well, I don't know. Don't cook your own dinner. Like, do take out.
like they did in the Christmas story when they went to the Chinese restaurant on Christmas Day when the dogs ate the turkey.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Or call Reed's and just go pick the order it a day in advance and go pick it up.
Okay. Well, Tracy, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing some fun and humor during the holiday season.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
And that's it for today. Another author giving voice to her written words. And that's also it for the first season. I want to thank you for listening. We had 11 talented authors in season one. Parker Zaha, Susan Proctor, Kathy Afrio, Brooke Reynolds, Kathy Collins, Gary Powell, Molly Barker, Paul Reale, Paula Martinak, Judy Goldman, and Tracy Curtis, whom you just heard. And thanks to Park Road Books, our season one sponsor, without whom we couldn't have put on this first season of the podcast. They're right there in Park Road Shopping Center. Go by and visit them. They've got all the books you need, particularly during this holiday season. And speaking of the holidays, I've got a few bonus episodes I'm going to offer between season one and season two. Since it's Christmas time, I've taped my first book, The Christmas Heist, A Courtroom Adventure, and I'm putting it out there on my podcast, free to you, the listener. And I hope you listen and enjoy during this holiday season. We'll be getting geared up for season two before long. I've got a great lineup coming. Look out for the authors on our social media platforms, Facebook page, Twitter. Also visit our website, charlottereaderspodcast.com. You can get information about the show and about the authors, about how to be a guest and about how to be a supporter, because it does take time, it does take cost to put this on. So check us out, join our email list. And when you do, you get a free ebook. We're not going to spam you, just keep you up to date on what's going on with the show. And send us information, send us feedback, tell us what you like about the show. Give us the name of an author you'd like to hear on the show. We want to tailor this to what you like to hear. I'm very gratified and appreciative of all the authors who appear on the show for the first season and all the feedback we've gotten so far. And I'm looking forward to season two. Until then, this is Landis Wade for Charlotte Readers Podcast.